You're listening to the Biohackers World Podcast.
Good morning, Nathan. I'm so happy to have so many questions for you.
Well, good morning.
About something you know very well. Nitric oxide.
Nitric oxide.
Nitric oxide. Can you tell us, like, the nitric oxide 101? What is it?
Yeah. Well, it's a signaling molecule. It's a naturally produced molecule that's, you know, we're finding that the older we get, the less we make. But
as a lot of things. I mean.
That's right. But fortunately, we're finding that doesn't have to be the case.
Okay.
But it's how cells in the body communicate. So it's mostly known as a vasodilator. So when it's produced, it dilates blood vessels, improves oxygen, nutrient delivery to every organ, tissue, and cell in the body. But it's a very potent anti-inflammatory molecule. It inhibits oxidative stress, and it corrects the immune dysfunction that
we
see.
And we can't live without it. Like, if we had zero, we would be dead.
You cannot live without it. In fact, we demonstrated this years ago when you take, if you eliminate the enzyme in animals and do a gene knockout, and you eliminate the nitric oxide that they're getting from their diet or from their breast milk, it's lethal.
Okay.
So
we need it.
We need it, yeah. It's a foundational molecule.
Okay, and you are known in the biohacking world for the inventor, I would say, for lack of a better word, of the NO supplement, which you call
N101.
Could you tell me why your product is, of course, better? And by the way, I did some research, and it's true. You are the number one. A lot of it outside of this product is not super great.
Yeah.
This one is truly working. Why is yours better?
Well, I think you have to look at where we came from, right? So in 1998, a Nobel Prize was awarded for the discovery of nitric oxide. And those discoveries said that the human body makes nitric oxide. It's a signaling molecule in the cardiovascular system. It's a very important discovery. So then the next question was, in this whole journey of discovery, is number one, how does the human body make nitric oxide?
And that would be my other question.
And then number two, why do we lose the ability to make it? And so you can't even think about developing rational therapies or products until you can answer those two questions. So there's no other company out there selling nitric oxide products
okay.
who has spent the depth and time in the research lab making discoveries, have published over 100 peer-reviewed papers, have several dozen issued patents, made discoveries. So you can't make nitric oxide products if you do not understand the science.
Makes sense.
And all these other companies out there selling you nitric oxide products, number one, they just don't have the experience or the knowledge. They're ignorant. I mean, ignorance is fine. It's just a lack of knowledge. So what we've done
I'm not sure if it's fine, though. We want them to be knowledgeable.
Well, that's why we're here.
Okay.
Right? We can cure ignorance. We can't cure stupidity.
That's a good one.
Stupidity is knowing the information, but yet still failing to recognize it or implement it.
I love that.
And so what we figured out is, number one, we know how the human body makes nitric oxide. We know what leads to a loss of its natural mm-hmm. production. And we know how to correct that. So our discoveries, my discoveries in product technology, are designed to do three things. Number one, if your body can't make nitric oxide, then we got to do it for you.
Okay.
Right? If your body can't make estrogen or testosterone, what do we give
it
to you.
Yeah.
Number two, we fix the reason your body can't make it. So there's two pathways. We recouple the enzyme, we fix the enzyme in the lining of the blood vessels, and we're restoring the normal oral flora that's responsible for the production of nitric oxide.
I have a question for you, and that's very personal. As a biohacker since 1998, I test, I don't guess.
Yeah,
I've been testing myself a lot. I have reversed pretty much everything. That's what I'm talking about, right? There's one thing no one has ever found until a month ago. I have a huge systemic inflammation, but no one could pinpoint where it was coming from. Now we know it's the NLRP3 inflammasome pathway overactivated. Could nitric oxide help with that? Because you mentioned anti-inflammatory.
Well, here's what we know. When we look at acute markers of inflammation, so number one, it tells us your body's inflamed. So whether it's an elevation in ferritin or an elevation in high-sensitivity C-reactive protein. So several of my patents are on a method of reducing C-reactive protein, independent of the source of the inflammation.
Okay.
So nitric oxide is an anti-inflammatory. We published a paper maybe in 2005, 2006, showing that nitric oxide inhibits the NF-kappa B inflammatory pathway. There's probably others, but certainly
so it could help.
That mechanism is pretty well elucidated.
Okay.
So, but until you remove the source of exposure of the inflammation, you know, nitric oxide can help mitigate the inflammatory response, but you still have to get to the root cause.
So far, we haven't figured it out, but we will.
Yeah.
Questions from the community, which I asked, you know, I was telling them, I'm going to interview Nathan Bryan. Do you have any questions? People are confused sometimes about nitric oxide versus nitrates. And potential cancer risk.
Yep.
Can you clear up that once and for all for our audience?
Yeah, look,
what's the
difference? Well, the difference is they're different oxidative metabolites of nitric oxide.
Okay.
So this whole field of nitrite and nitrate and cured meats and cancer started in the 1950s. And it was based on simple observations. So the observation was that people who ate a preponderance more of cured and processed meat had a slight risk in gastrointestinal cancers, mainly stomach cancers, gastroesophageal. And so in order to, so there's a process of, it's not just association, but it's establishing causation. Mm-hmm. So association is not causation.
Yeah.
To establish causation, there's certain things you have to go through. So number one, there has to be a biologically plausible mechanism. Their biologically plausible mechanism was nitride can form nitrosamines, nitrosamines can intercalate DNA and cause mutagenesis and cancer. In the early 2000s, the National Toxicology Program, because of that risk, they investigate that and see, is there an increased risk of nitrite in cured and processed meats mm-hmm. and cancers? And the results from that was there's no.
Because in Europe, they say it's yes, so I'm confused.
Well, no, the only way to test that is to do dose escalation studies in different animal models and look at different types of cancers. Mm-hmm. And the results from that multi-year dose escalation study where there's no increased risk of cancer in nitrite or nitrate. Okay. So that's the basic science and
that's
the clinical
huge,
study.
That's huge, because today, if you ask 9 doctors out of 10, they will tell you there is not only a correlation, but also a causation. So you're saying it's not true.
No, it's not true. And the other thing, the important observation we see is if that were true, people who eat a plant-based diet, a vegetarian diet, would have 10 times higher rates of cancer than meat eaters. Because 85% of the burden we get from our diet that exposes us to nitrate and nitrite comes from plants. Mm-hmm. It does not come from cured and processed meats.
Great, only so we can go back to our chorizo and ham.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, for me, it's a balanced diet in moderation, including meats, including mm-hmm. cured meats. I mean, because you have to cure meats or else you're going to get foodborne pathogens and you're going to spoil.
I'm from an island where we cure meat all the time. You know, Corsicans, we eat ham all the time. And by the way, guys, you don't see, but people around here, they're smiling and happy about that thing that we just said.
That's right. You know, in fact, in probably 15 years ago, we argued that not only are nitrite and nitrate, we showed that it has anti-cancer effects. So we've argued for the past 15, 20 years that nitrite and nitrate are indispensable nutrients. Just like if you become deficient in magnesium or vitamin D, it predisposes you to certain diseases. If we're deficient in nitrite or nitrate from our diet or from endogenous production, it predisposes us to things like heart attack, stroke, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's. So these are indispensable nutrients that we have to focus on, that we have to replete, and we have to have the systems in place to continually replace them.
So you're talking about naturally occurring nitrates and nitrites, but how about the ones that the industry, the food industry, adds to cured products? Is that a problem or not?
No, it's not a problem at all, because these are salts, and salts, once they reach solution, they dissociate and they form these exact same molecules. So whether we're producing inorganic nitrite or nitrate from the oxidation of nitric oxide that's produced naturally in our body, or we're taking it as a salt that's added to meats, when we consume these, it gets into our GI tract, it's absorbed in our circulatory system, and it's the exact same molecule that's indistinguishable from the molecule that's naturally produced.
This is huge. Okay, so I'm going to rephrase it. I want to 1 minute on this.
Yeah.
Can we say that cured meats do not cause cancer because of their nitrate content?
That's absolutely correct statement. So let me qualify that. I'd never argue with the epidemiological data, because what the data show, and I think it's indisputable, people who eat cured meats, processed meats completely different, cured meats that have sodium nitrite or potassium mm-hmm. nitrate added, saltpeter, have a very low increased risk of certain gastrointestinal cancers, primarily stomach cancer. But it's not due to the nitrite and nitrate content. That's completely clear, and we've completely debunked that myth. Now, the question is, in nutritional epidemiology, there's so many confounding factors that may contribute to that slight increased risk. But I can say 100% with certainty, based on the basic science and the clinical thing, that it's the nitrite and nitrate in it is not what's causing the slight increased risk of certain.
So that's huge. Could we think that maybe it's because people who tend to eat a lot of cured meats and daily or processed food usually are going to be having, I don't know, smoothies, shakes, burgers, french fries, and other foods that could be causing the cancer and not the nitrates?
Yeah. Or there's data showing that cured and processed meat eaters tend to smoke more. They have a more sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it's all these confounding factors that even the best nutritional epidemiological studies can never account for all the confounders. So there's always certain confounders that may attribute to that increased slight risk, but it's not due to the nitrite.
I'm so happy. I'm going back to my Corsican ham. This is cool. So Alzheimer's is a big question today. Yep. And in my family, I've had my two grandmothers who died of dementia, but maybe it was Alzheimer's. At the time, we didn't know. So it's a subject I'm really, really looking at and what we can do. I've looked at red light therapy with Cleveland Clinic and other things like that. But you guys at Bryan Technologies, you are developing a product, a nitric oxide-based drug to help with Alzheimer's. Is it to stop the problem, to prevent it, or to reverse it?
It's to do all three.
Oh, wow.
And so what we're finding is that Alzheimer's and dementia is a vascular disease and it's a metabolic disease, right? So in all Alzheimer's patients, we see a reduced blood flow or perfusion to the brain. We call that focal ischemia. And then you've probably heard Alzheimer's be termed diabetes type 3.
Yes.
So it's insulin resistance. It's a lack of glucose uptake into the neurons. And then what happens if you have decreased blood flow, insulin resistance, you get protein misfolding. And that's the amyloid plaque and the tau tangles. So developing drug therapy against the amyloid and the tau cannot work. And that's why all of these drugs have failed, despite billions of dollars in development. Because the amyloid plaque and the tau tangles are the consequence of the disease. They don't cause the disease. So what we focused on is getting to the root cause of disease, improving perfusion and increasing blood supply to the brain, improving insulin sensitivity, improving glucose uptake to where you don't get the protein misfolding. And fortunately for us, that's what nitric oxide does. So when we take Alzheimer's patients, and the trick for us as we develop this in drug therapy is the inclusion. At what stage do we enroll patients? And we want to achieve two things. Number one, we want to enroll patients that are far enough along to where they have bona fide disease, vascular dementia, early Alzheimer's, to where if we can show that we can slow the progression. But we also want to catch them far enough along to where we can show regression. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe, I'm convinced that nitric oxide is the cause or the cure for the treatment, prevention, and reversal of Alzheimer's and dementia.
Why would we need a special drug when you already have your N101, N0101? What's the difference between both?
Well, the N101 is a dietary supplement. So number one, it's not intended to treat, prevent, cure, or diagnose any disease. And supplementation
good
is much
disclaimer,
different.
By the way.
Supplementation is much different than drug therapy. So for supplemental dose, like for you and I, I've been taking my nitric oxide product for 20 years, and I take it because I supplement it, right? Mm-hmm. But if you've got a patient with diagnosed disease, whether it's ischemic heart disease, Alzheimer's, then their amount of nitric oxide that they need to overcome their metabolic and vascular deficiencies is much different than us who are healthy.
That's okay.
So the difference is the dosing and the titration.
Okay.
So we want to deliver a drug therapy dose that specifically addresses that particular phase of disease to prevent the progression, but more importantly, reverse the disease. Same technology. It releases nitric oxide gas.
But different
scope. But it's
scope.
A different dosing. It's kind of like a prescription for Tylenol versus OTC Tylenol, right?
So now it's going to be very personal. You spoke about ischemia and brain health.
Yeah.
I'm a mountain climber on top of everything else. You know, I've written 55 books. I do things and stuff. But in the past 8 years, I climbed 43 very high mountains in the Himalayas. This has led to, obviously, problems, you know, oxygen deprivation. So I have ischemia in my brain. I have been told you can't cure that by white coats.
You've been misinformed.
But first, I'm starting tomorrow. I have a HBOT at home. I have a hyperbaric chamber. I'm doing a 40 session next day after day. Supposedly, I talked to a big brain expert at UCLA, Cedars-Sinai, told me after 40 sessions at 1.3, 1.5 ATMs, you have amazing results.
Yep.
But now I'm thinking, if I combine this, and maybe there's a timing we can talk about, with nitric oxide, I could speed up
Absolutely.
The healing. So how much more should I take to particularly aim at reducing or destroying this ischemia?
Well, we know the reason hyperbaric oxygen therapy works is because it increases the amount of dissolved oxygen in the blood, right? Mm-hmm. It's not improving blood oxygen saturation.
Yeah.
It's through Fick's laws and increasing saturation of or improving solubility of oxygen. And then that leads to nitric oxide production. Nitric oxide mobilizes stem cells repair and replace, and it's improving perfusion. So what we've done is if you take my lozenge, the N101 lozenge, as you're getting into the hyperbaric chamber.
So as I go there, okay.
As you're getting in okay. there. So it's a 5 to 6 minute dissolution rate. So now we're going to increase the amount of dissolved oxygen. We're going to open up the small blood vessels. And now you're going to fully oxygenate, fully perfuse the tissue. We're going to reduce inflammation. We're going to mobilize stem cells more effectively. And we're going to improve your mitochondrial function.
This is huge.
No, it's
so you're
this
saying
is,
I can
this
fix
is biohacking
my
at its best.
I know, that's what I've been I was born with so many conditions. I'm not supposed to be here today. So that's why I talk about reversing the irreversible. So when people tell me you have ischemia and there's nothing that can be done, I'm like, baby, watch me.
That's not true, no.
So I like that. So nitric oxide every day when I do that. But then maybe a second time after or later, like 12 hours later?
Yeah, 12 hours later, one twice a day. The other important thing when you talk about altitude and low environmental oxygen, in 2007, we published a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science showing that people who live in Tibet, 12,000 feet above sea level, have about 50 to 100 times more nitric oxide output than people in the U.S. So the adaptive effects of low oxygen, training at altitude, living at altitude, is your body compensates by increasing nitric oxide production. But that's dependent upon the function of the
enzyme. And how long you stay there as well.
And how long you stay
there. If you
just
go like me, like 3 months a year, 2 months a year, it's not enough.
Yeah, but these people have lived there. They were born there. They've lived there their entire life. So their nitric oxide output, and that's why they don't get altitude sickness.
Yeah.
That's why they don't get high altitude pulmonary edema.
And by the way, I never get altitude sickness. After 43 summits, knock on wood, oh my God, there's no wood here, but anyway, this is baby wood. I've never had it, so I'm wondering if maybe I have somehow.
No, your body's adapted to efficiently produce nitric oxide to compensate for the low oxygen.
And if I were to take nitric oxide as I'm climbing, I'm actually leading 15 ladies to the top of Kilimanjaro in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
If they take nitric oxide, is that going to help them?
Absolutely. We were a part of an expedition by Dr. Joe Maroon, who's a neurosurgeon at University of Pitt and the Pittsburgh Steelers team physician. And he led a group of 15 kind of amputees, veterans, to Kilimanjaro, and we supplied them with our nitric oxide product. Not a single person got altitude sickness. They summited 2 days earlier than they had planned for. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. I mean, so you take this, you super oxygenate. Because even though you're breathing in less oxygen, we're improving oxygen delivery through the production of nitric oxide. So it can completely overcome the low oxygen.
Wow, this is, I'm so happy talking about that. People say, I mean, it's a fact, oxygen is oxidizing. Yeah. So why increasing my nitric oxide is going to be healthy?
Well, it depends upon the function of the mitochondria. The mitochondria, the organelles in the cell that take oxygen and make it into cellular energy, ATP. If your mitochondria aren't functional, then it leads to electron leakage and you produce superoxide or hydroxyl radical, these potent oxidants. But it all depends upon the efficiency of oxygen delivery and the efficiency of mitochondrial function to convert that oxygen into cellular energy.
Okay, well, thank you. That was short. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, guys, if you missed Chicago, if you missed Los Angeles, it's okay. No panic, because we have the same event in Miami early November. Really come. It's an amazing community. We learn so much. And even so, even if you think you're a biohacker who knows everything, believe me, you will learn something in Miami.